You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I hated my Catholic high school. Wanted to transfer somewhere else, anywhere else. I was miserable. I was so sick of getting beaten up by bullies. I was really tired of flunking Latin. And I didn't believe in God anymore. But I was a quarter of my way through my sophomore year, and my parents said no, I would have to finish that year at Quigley Preparatory Seminary North, and then we could talk about the possibility that I might be able to transfer to a different school. So I did what any painfully shy, musical theater-obsessed, introverted mama's boy of a closeted gay kid would do. I bombed my school. I got my hands on two M80s, probably got them from my older brother Eddie, who generally knew how to get his hands on things kids weren't supposed to get their hands on. M80s are commonly believed to be a quarter of a stick of dynamite. That belief is so common, I believed it until I Googled M80s this morning. Turns out they're nowhere near a quarter stick of dynamite. But they were originally developed by the U.S. military in the early 20th century to simulate exploding artillery shells during training exercises. The more you know. Anyway, one day during school, when everyone else was in class and the halls were empty, I lit two M80s, threw them in my locker, closed the door, and walked out of the building. You know those action movies where they show the hero walking away from the exploding building or car, airplane, or planet, or whatever in slow motion? It was like that. If I'd had a smartphone then, I would have filmed it and I'd be able to prove it. But I didn't have a smartphone then because nobody did. So you're going to have to take my word for it. I was walking out the door when I heard the explosion and I didn't flinch or turn around or look back. And while two M80s do not, as it turns out, add up to a half a stick of dynamite, the two of them together did manage to blow the motherfucking door off my fucking locker. I was expelled that day. So it worked. The M80s, they worked. And my plan, it worked. I also didn't kill anyone, and thank God for that. And this was decades ago, so I didn't get arrested and sent to prison. Man, imagine being sent directly from an all-boys Catholic high school full of violent bullies and predatory priests to a prison where I'd have to worry about violence and sexual assault. Anyway, the memory of that day, the day I did what may have been the single coolest thing I've ever done, coolest in the action movie sense, and the single stupidest thing I've ever done, stupid in the danger it posed to others sense, I mean, the door to my locker flew across the hall and slammed into a wall. If someone had been walking by at that moment, I hate to think what might have happened. But anyway, the memory of that day, the day I got myself expelled from my Christian high school that I hated, from my Catholic seminary high school where kids who were thinking about becoming priests, boys, were sent. All those memories came flooding back as I read the news about Kimberly Alford. Kimberly is a 15-year-old student at Whitefield Academy, a K-12 private Christian school in Louisville, Kentucky. Or she was a student at Whitefield until some eagle-eyed administrator spotted a photo of Kimberly on Facebook taken at her birthday party. In the photo, Kimberly is wearing a sweater with a rainbow on it and blowing out the candles on a very colorful cake. From the letter that Kimberly's parents got from Bruce Jacobson, the head of school, the WA administration has been made aware of a recent picture posted on social media which demonstrates a posture of morality and cultural acceptance contrary to that of Whitefield Academy's beliefs. A copy of the photo was enclosed, Kimberly in her rainbow sweater sitting in front of her rainbow-ish cake, and Kimberly's enrollment, the letter went on, at Whitefield was terminated effective immediately. All parents who enroll their children in our private school know up front that we ask the students to adhere to a lifestyle informed by our Christian beliefs, the letter continued. Now, for the record, neither the rainbow on Kimberly's sweater nor the kind of stripy colors on her cake resemble the gay pride rainbow flag, and Kimberly's mom was literally able to produce receipts. She asked the bakery to make a colorful cake, the kind of cake a teenage girl might want to celebrate her birthday, not a rainbow pride cake, you know, the kind of cake a twink might order to celebrate his first spit roasting, but rainbows, rainbows, now so tarnished, so covered in queer cooties that being seen in one or near one can get you expelled from Whitefield Academy. So those sun showers in the spring, you Whitefield kids who don't want to get expelled, Might want to hide in your parents' basements until the rainbow shit is over. And a quick point of order on some Bible study, because I know that's what everybody listens to this show for. The rainbow, before Judy Garland and the cocksuckers got our grubby hands all over it, was a symbol of God's new covenant with humankind after the flood. It comes at the end of the Noah's Ark storyline. Basically, after God got really mad and decided to drown every living thing on the planet, every man, woman, and child, every fetus in their mother's womb, every living thing but Noah and his family, and as many breeding pairs as they could fit on the ark, after God was done murdering everyone, he sent a rainbow as a sign that he would not do that again. And God said, "This," he means the rainbow, "is a sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. Whenever a rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember," this is God talking about himself to himself, "I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind, and never again send the waters to become a flood to destroy all life." So basically, those rainbows in the sky aren't there to remind us or Noah and his family about this new covenant, but they're there to remind God not to kill everybody. You know, freshman year when I entered quickly, I wanted to be a priest, and I kind of believed. By sophomore year, I didn't want to be a priest, and I didn't believe because I read the Bible. Anyway, after God is done making this pretty speech in which he admits to being a kind of absent-minded mass murderer who needs to be reminded now and again not to do mass murder, Noah's kids get busy incesting the shit out of each other to repopulate the planet. It's really charming. This story, and I mean now the one about Kimberly Alford and Whitefield Academy, it does have a happy ending. Kimberly's going to a public school now, where she gets to learn about evolution and might get to see a woman from Planned Parenthood roll a condom onto a banana, and where school administrators presumably won't be combing through her Facebook posts for evidence of thought crimes. But the most important lesson here, or the real takeaway for me, is how lucky the kids are at Whitefield Academy who want to get themselves expelled. It's pretty easy. I had to get my hands on simulated artillery shells and blow up my locker and risk jail time to get my ass expelled from Quigley. You kids at Whitefield, you just have to be photographed near a cake of many colors or walk outside during a sun shower and take a selfie. I wish Quigley had been as easy to escape from as Whitefield Academy. All right, coming up today on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show, guests, and no ads, Michal David joins us to discuss hypnotism, the kink. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for sleep and relaxation. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today.
Hi, Dan. 31-year-old bisexual woman. 1 year ago, I left a 7-year-long relationship that was very toxic and abusive, and I'm now happy to be single and focusing on myself. But I did get into a sort of uncomfortable situation now. About 2 months ago, I had sex with a friend of mine, kind of a drug-filled night, and it was a friend I've known for years, but never envisioned any kind of sexual or romantic relationship with them. And I said, you know, this was a mistake. Let's just pretend that never happened and go back to being friends. But then as we were continuing to just hang out as friends, he told me that he was actually attracted to me and had feelings for me and was a little persistent in wanting to keep exploring a sexual relationship. I had a lot of qualms right up front about it. I told him, you know, right away, it concerned me because if it ends or things don't go well, sometimes when you have sex with a friend, that can end up hurting the friendship. And his friendship was very important to me, and I didn't want to lose that. Also, he and I, in conjunction with two other friends of ours, are about to be launching a business together. So, yeah, you know, don't fuck where you eat. Seems like a bad idea. And I told him all my concerns. Also, that because of this relationship that I left recently, you know, I'm really just not in a place where I can open myself up to anything serious emotionally. I can't really give a lot right now. I can't make any promises or any commitments. I don't want to be in a relationship right now. And despite all these concerns, he was very persistent. And he said he wasn't going to ask too much of me or ask for any commitment, but that he really liked me and really wanted to explore this. And he promised that if the sex ended, he promised it would not ruin or change our friendship. We would just go back to being friends the way it was before. So after all that, I kind of gave in a little. Maybe, I guess at the time I was feeling a little lonely and he was there. So anyway, I decided to give it a shot. And, you know, I really do enjoy spending time with him. I enjoy his company. We laugh together. We talk about everything together. I feel comfortable around him. It's been about 2 months now. The main problem is the sex. It's the worst sex I've ever had. It's just for several reasons. One, he kind of has a disappointingly small dick. Also, he does not seem to have the skills with his tongue and fingers and everything. I've tried so hard to teach him and give him very explicit directions. It doesn't seem to be sinking in. But the more important problem, I think, is that I'm just not physically attracted to him. I thought at first maybe, you know, I'll give it a chance. Sometimes attraction can grow, or it takes time to find rhythms with a new person sexually, but it's just not happening. The attraction is not growing. I'm not feeling it to the point where I'm starting to feel kind of annoyed. Almost, he's become very clingy, very needy. So, you know, I gave it a shot. It's not working. So I finally did what I knew I had to do, which is to end it. I told him, look, I really love your company. I value your friendship and your companionship. I care about you, but I don't feel the attraction the same way that you are. And I just would like to go back to being friends and not keep having sex. And he responded basically saying, you know, that's okay if you're not attracted to me, if you don't have those kind of feelings for me. You can't force that. I can't change that. And that's okay. However, he said now that he has become so in love with me and so attracted to me that now to continue to spend time together as friends without having sex, he said, would just be torture to him and it would be just too painful. And so therefore he does not want to see me, doesn't want to be around me, doesn't want to continue talking or texting outside of the context of our like group business meetings with our other friends. Yeah, I guess I felt really hurt by all of that. I felt, you know, a little betrayed maybe and a little abandoned by my friend. I felt like he made me this promise that he is either going back on, or maybe I felt a little manipulated. Did he just say that at the time because he knew it was the thing he had to say to get to have sex at the time? So yeah, I guess my question is, can I salvage this friendship now, or do I need to respect his feelings? You know, maybe he did fall hard and he needs a little time and space to detach. On the other hand, I felt a little like he suddenly abandoned me, and I felt like I needed him as my friend now. Then also, how do we move forward now? We have to continue navigating this like business partnership with our other group of people in business meetings. And do I have a right to expect him to keep his promise that he was going to stay my friend and go back to the way it was before? Am I being selfish or unreasonable to expect that? Or do I need to let it go, give it some space, maybe just let it have some time? Maybe I'm being impatient. Let it have some time and things can go back to normal after a little space.
Maybe he lied. That is always a possibility. People lie to people to get into their pants. People tell people what they think they want to hear or must hear to get what they want from them. And he wanted to have a chance with you. He didn't just want to have sex with you. He wanted a shot. He wanted a chance at a committed, loving, sexual relationship. And he promised you, because you were wary, you just got out of a 7-year toxic, abusive relationship, and you didn't think that this was right, and you valued his friendship, and you didn't want to risk that. And so he promised you that if it went south, if you decided you didn't want to be with him, that he would pivot back to friendship, that he would do that. He could still do that, but right now he can't, and you have to respect that. You can't salvage your friendship with him on your terms or on your timetable against his will. What he's telling you right now is that it's too painful hanging out with you. It's too painful talking with you. That's often the case when people get dumped, even after 2 months, when people get dumped. It's painful to be with or hang out with the person who dumped you, whether you began to date them the first moment you met them, if it was a hookup online and then it just took off, or whether they were friends and you found yourself in bed after years and years and years. It's hard to be around the person who dumped you, but it's not hard forever. You're just going to have to be patient and give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he lied, or maybe this was a marker that he hoped that he could live up to this and expected that he could, but now because his feelings got all wrapped up in it, he can't right now. The world is full of people who are friends with their exes. The world is not full of people who are friends with their exes immediately after they dumped their boyfriend or girlfriend and made that person into an ex. Give him some time. Give him some space. Don't take responsibility for it. You didn't do anything wrong here. You can also remind him of the promise that he made you and say that you hope that eventually you can get there and that he can make good on that promise because you do value his friendship and you would like to someday have him in your life again as a friend. That you are still in his life as a business partner, you're still working on this project together, means you're going to have some interactions that'll help you power through the awkwardness, and that will help you get there in time. You weren't a bad person for giving him a shot. I would, if I were you, give him the benefit of the doubt about the promise and then give him time and give him space. You really have no choice but to give him time and give him space. If he says, if anyone says, I can't hang out with you right now, I can't text with you right now, it's too painful for me, you can't say, but you promised, and force them to hang out with you or force them to text you or force them to be your friend. If you guys are going to be friends again, that will come in time. If you're never going to be friends again, well, I guess you'll find that out when you're dead, because there's always going to be a chance that even if it takes years, you could reestablish this friendship. Stranger things have happened. And a quick addendum, you can have great sex with people who have small penises. There are people out there who have small penises who know how to work that penis. They know how to like grind on someone to get them off. A woman's pleasure or ability to climax during intercourse is often about external stimulation, external clitoral stimulation, not about getting a dick up inside her as far as a guy can possibly go. And there are toys, there are tongues, there are fingers, there are forearms, there are lots of things a guy can bring to the table or bring to the bed or bring to the dungeon or bring to the wherever and still be great sex, even with a smaller dick.
Hey, Dan, my sex drive right now is so low. Like, I can't even get a hard on anymore. I can't even, like, watch porn. I can't do anything. I think it's the government. Everything is, like, making me so turned off about everyone. And no, I should not let that control me. But at the same time, like, I'm a gay dude living in the Northwest, and I'm just not attracted to anyone. Like, anyone that messages me on, like, apps or anything like that. And it's probably not good. Maybe I'm an asshole. I don't fucking know. I just want to get back to a normal sex drive. Like, I don't have a sex drive. I quit smoking weed, like, probably over a year ago. I drink beer. I drink a lot of beer. And then on top of that, like, I don't know. I just don't get along with anyone, man. Like, everyone that I meet, like, I try so hard to, like, find something in them that, like, we get along or on the same status. But, like, I just don't get along with anyone. And is that just a thing? Like, is that a big city thing? Is it a small town thing? I mean, I don't know what to do. 37 years old, I'd love to date somebody. I'd love to get married. I'd love to adopt kids. But, like, I can't even, every single time that I put that out there on, like, any of these, like, Grindr or Scruff or, what's the other one? Adam for Adam. Like, I know they're all hookup sites, but nobody's looking seriously right now. And it's freaking me out. And it seems like everybody's, like, super sexually active and not fucking putting a condom on their dick. And I don't know.
There might be guys on Grindr and Scruff who want to marry. I know there are actually definitely, I can say for sure. There are guys on Grindr and Scruff and Adam for Adam and every other hookup app who would like someday to be married, like someday to have kids. But you leading with marriage and kids on these hookup apps is going to provoke, even from guys who want what you want, ultimately, a kind of, this is a Wendy's, sir, reaction. You're asking for, looking right now in this place for a thing that isn't what's on offer in this place. And that demonstrates kind of bad judgment. That's one of my hobby horses around here. I think we need to demonstrate good judgment. And what you look for on hookup apps are hookups. And you can make it clear that you're open to more than just a hookup. And that will send a lot of guys who are only interested in hookups running. You don't want to waste your time on those guys and attract the attention of guys who, like you, are interested in hooking up. That's why they're on a hookup app, but interested or open to potentially something more serious if they hook up with somebody and really click. All that said, I don't get along with anyone. Is that a thing? Yeah, it's a thing. It's a problematic thing, and it's your thing that you need to take responsibility for. You need to get your ass into therapy. If you don't get along with anyone, if you're just angry and bitter and judgmental, you're not going to attract positive attention. You're not going to meet people who want to spend time with you or want to have a relationship with you because you don't like them. You don't like anyone. I get it. The state of the world right now, shit is bad. You have to be able to compartmentalize. You have to be able to be upset and do what you can to make the world a better place around the edges and donate and volunteer where you can and be a part of the solution. You also need to be able to shift gears and enjoy your life and the time you have with people that you enjoy spending time with. And right now, there are no people on earth that you believe you could enjoy spending time with. You could go see cats with. I went and saw cats. Oh my God, it's amazing. Go see cats. Maybe it'll help snap you out of it. But what you really need to see is a therapist or a counselor. You really need to talk this out with someone. Not someone on Grindr, not someone on Scruff or Adam for Adam or Recon or anywhere else. You need to talk with somebody who's a professional about the dark place you're in, about the corner that you've found yourself stuck in emotionally, maybe that you've painted yourself into emotionally. You need to find your way out of that corner. And no one you meet on Grindr or Scruff or Adam or Adam or anywhere else is going to be able to lead you out of that corner. I'm trying to be kind, and I ache for you. I do. Shit is bad, and it is getting to a lot of us. But you are not in good working order right now. You are not going to attract the attentions of someone who is themselves in good working order. You might attract attention from someone who is reeling and damaged in the same way you are reeling and damaged, but you're not going to have a healthy relationship with that person. It won't be possible. We don't have to be perfect. We're allowed to have our issues. We're allowed to be depressed occasionally. We're allowed to be depressed a lot. We're allowed to feel our feelings, but we have to be functional. To have a partner, to attract a partner, to attract a spouse, to raise kids, you have to be functional. And if everywhere you look, you see people that you hate or make you angry or that you can't be bothered with or that you resent for not being receptive to your offer of marriage and children on a hookup app, you are the problem. You are the common denominator in all those negative interactions and all that disappointment. You need to work on you. Get yourself to a therapist. Talk it out. You say you gave up pot and started drinking more. My advice would be to flip that. No one I know who gives up pot and drinks more winds up happier than the people who give up booze and pot in moderation, if not more. But individual results may vary. Maybe you need to give up the booze and the pot too. Unpack that with your therapist. They say it takes 2 months to form a habit. And if you're making a resolution this year, that can feel like a long time to wait and see if it's going to kick, if it's going to stick, and you're going to get results. But with Calm, all it takes is 5 minutes a day to feel better, calmer, and ready to face whatever this year throws at you. Calm is the number one app for sleep, relaxation, and meditation. Calm has sleep stories, which are like bedtime stories for adults. They can help you fall into a deep, natural sleep in minutes. And stories are narrated by iconic voices like LeVar Burton and Nick Offerman. They also have soothing music from artists like Sam Smith, guided meditations, breathing exercises, and so much more to help you relax and de-stress. And if you go to calm.com/savage, you'll get a limited time offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programming. Over 60 million people use Calm. Join them today to accomplish your goals tomorrow. For listeners of our show, Calm is offering a special limited promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. That's 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library, and new content is added every week. Get started today at calm.com/savage. That's calm.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I am a hetero female in the Midwest. I've been married for about 5 years, and I'm actually pregnant right now. So very happy with my husband. I did have a question or concern about making out. I know it seems silly at this point, but he has really thick fits, and I've kind of gotten on his case, being like, you're not hydrated enough, it's slimy, and, you know, sometimes he's like, I drink a lot of water, I don't know what you're talking about, and sometimes I just don't necessarily believe that. But regardless, when we make out, it's just kind of a lot for me, and so we've kind of more or less stopped. Sex is good. I do miss making out, but also it's not a huge thing that I am upset about that isn't part of our life anymore. So I guess my question for you is, like, is there a way to communicate this better to him that I do kind of miss this, but it's also not a huge deal breaker, but also I'm not 100% okay with his oral health? I don't know. If you have any recommendations, I'd love to hear your response.
You know how they warn people not to Google minor medical conditions because you'll have a panic attack based on what you read? I Googled thick and slimy saliva and instantly got, oh my God, cancer. It could be cancer, salivary gland cancer. So maybe your husband needs to go to the doctor and have his salivary glands checked out. But it is far likelier, according to the Mayo Clinic, that your husband is not getting enough fluids. Your diagnosis. You've asked him to drink more. Don't ask. Put a glass of water in front of him. This is sometimes what spouses do for each other. Spouse is complaining about some ache, some pain, some medical thing, and you get tired of telling them to make an appointment to see the doctor, and you make the appointment for them to see the doctor yourself to make sure it gets done. It's one of the reasons that people in marriages, married people, tend to live longer. They're likelier to get medical care, not of their own volition, but because their spouse forces them to. You can force your spouse, after he gets checked out to see if he's got salivary gland cancer, you can force your spouse to drink more water. Not by asking him to, but by setting a glass of water in front of him and folding your arms across your chest and insisting. And there's a reward for him, and you should emphasize that as well. The more water he drinks, the more hydrated he is, the less thick and slimy his saliva is, the more of it you are going to drink yourself. Thrift store shopping is super fun, and it helps reduce textile waste, which is a very serious problem. But getting to your local thrift store and digging through the racks can be time-consuming. And if you live far from an urban center, your options are usually pretty limited. But now you can thrift store shop like the big city hipsters with ThredUp. ThredUp is the largest online thrift store with up to 90% off estimated retail. You get insane deals. You get the insane deals of thrifting with the convenience of online shopping from all your favorite brands. Score Nike for only $6. Theory starting at $20. Lululemon starting at $27. J.Crew $10 and more. Everything at a fraction of its original price. And today, you get an extra 30% off your first order at threadup.com/savage. Instead of spending hours in the racks looking for that one special find, you can customize your search on ThredUp by your size, style, and budget so you can find the best deals instantly. It's so easy. Everything is in high quality condition, and lots of items even have their tags still on. Plus, ThredUp gets new arrivals every minute, so there are always new treasures to find. Sustainable. stylish, totally affordable. Get there with ThredUp. And for Savage Lovecast listeners, here's an exclusive offer just for you. Get an extra 30% off your first order at ThredUp.com/Savage. That's ThredUp.com/Savage for 30% off your first order. ThredUp.com/Savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hey, Dan, big fan. I listen to your show the second it comes out every week, so I appreciate your input. Just want to know what you think about my situation. My current relationship started and evolved under some strange circumstances. We've had amazing times. We have amazing chemistry, but we've had a rough go the last little while, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on it. We met through one of the local polyamory groups, and it began as just a friends with benefits situation. She was married and in an open relationship, and I was divorced and just dating a lot of people. The first time we had sex was hands down the best sex either of us has ever had in our lives. 2 years later, we still have incredible sex regularly, which may be a part of why we put up with so much crap from each other. She ended up deciding to divorce her husband after years together being religious, losing their religion, realizing that was the main reason they got together, then trying the open relationship thing as basically a last-ditch effort. They decided to call it quits. They are still in the process of divorce and will probably get papers early this coming year. We fell in love and decided to be monogamous with each other. We've been together over 2 years now, 1 year while she was married and one while separated going through the divorce process. But I've basically been a secret to the majority of people in her life as she's not yet divorced. She has an exhibitionism kink, which was fueled in their marriage, lots of hot wifing type stuff going on. She's absolutely beautiful and enjoys the attention that she gets from it. And that's fine, I can deal with that. I feel okay about it, and we've found ways to involve me and ways to compromise, so we've figured out a way to make that work together. Her and her ex also have a post-religion sex positivity group where once a month everyone posts sexy pictures of themselves and they discuss their sex lives post-religion. Her ex and her started the group and are admins, and he has vetoed my request to join the group, and this kind of just makes me uncomfortable. This kink, this group, being a secret to everyone in her life, and past online attention-seeking behaviors have all made me really insecure about this relationship. I know that she loves me, and we've even talked about marriage, but these are not normal relationship circumstances, and I get nervous talking about the future when we can't even be public with our present. We keep coming back and fighting about this stupid group. We've worked through a lot of bad social media behaviors that are disrespectful on both of our ends, but this group is just hard for me to get past. She's left it a couple times and always goes back to it whenever we fought about anything. We're currently taking a break, and I am miserable. I don't want to lose this amazing connection over some dumb Facebook group. She doesn't want to leave the group, as she created it and obviously gets a lot out of it. And I try to ignore it, but it slowly just eats away at me until it gets mentioned, and then I end up getting upset about it. Am I being too controlling? Is it wrong of me to ask that my partner and possibly future wife not be in a sex group with her ex that I'm not allowed to be in, see, or even talk about? Anyway, I'd love to hear what you think, Dan. I'm sure I'm probably being too controlling over this dumb group, but it really just eats away at me.
There's a lot going on here. Religious couple, divorce, this crazy dirty Facebook group, the fact that your girlfriend isn't public about her relationship with you, even though she's public with dirty pictures and public about being poly, she's keeping you hidden away. There's just a lot going on here, and I think that you have latched onto this Facebook group that she created and still shares with her soon-to-be ex-husband, not quite yet ex-husband, as symbolic somehow of her commitment to you or her seriousness about you and whether you two are now the couple. You say that you two became monogamous. You also say that you two are on a break now. And she is back to posting in this Facebook group with her husband or keeps returning to it or with soon-to-be ex-husband. I think you need to stay on the break from your girlfriend until after her divorce is finalized. And then you should only resume things with your girlfriend if she can be public about her relationship with you. If you can officially be her acknowledged monogamous boyfriend. And I think if you get to that point where you can publicly be her boyfriend – that this Facebook group will be less galling to you, because what it symbolizes, at least right now, is that publicly she is still in this kind of partnership with her soon-to-be ex-husband, and that they still share this, and he is the one who's publicly acknowledged, even if it's just in the small confines of this dirty little Facebook group, as her partner and partner in crime, partner in encouraging people to post these dirty pictures and share these dirty pictures in this space. And so right now the Facebook group kind of symbolizes to you and your disposability, your invisibility. And so as she is very publicly visible, still interacting with her ex-husband in this Facebook group, and you're the hidden, you're the secret, you're the dirty little secret that she hasn't acknowledged publicly, that upsets you. The Facebook group upsets you more than it likely would if you were publicly her boyfriend and she was still doing this crazy little Facebook group with her ex-husband and some of their mutual friends. And while ordering her not to post pictures in this Facebook group would certainly be controlling, and while you guys are officially broken up, not something you can reasonably ask her to do, what you're really asking for is to be her priority. And right now you don't feel like her priority, and the Facebook group symbolizes that. It salts a wound. And it's the wound that's the problem, the lack of any public acknowledgement of your existence. If you salt what isn't a wound, you don't even feel it. You probably wouldn't even feel it if this Facebook group existed and it was something that your girlfriend did, considering that you're, you know, poly and open, or previously were poly and open. If your girlfriend did this and had this little thing on the side with some friends, including maybe your ex-boyfriend or ex-husband, it wouldn't bother you so much. But right now it does. Circumstances need to change, perhaps, for it to bother you less. The divorce needs to be finalized. You two need to be public about your relationship. That's going to take some time. And I don't think you should end this break and pick things back up with her until after the divorce is finalized and you two can go public.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it simple and intuitive to create your website, blog, or online store. Let's say you're just getting started with a new political group or an embroidery meetup or a Balkan band. You're going to need your own website, which sounds like a lot of work, but you can build it yourself with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. They have templates that were created by clever designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. You can collaborate with other members of your group and turn your website into a group project. Drop in some video or audio. Pretty much anything you could possibly need is right there waiting for you. And once your website's done, you can get on with your life. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage, and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. My fiance and I are getting married in 5 months. We're super excited to plan our wedding, and we're doing this kind of on our own because our families are not so involved in it. So about 2 months ago, my mom sent a group text to my sister and I announcing that her and her boyfriend are going to get married, and they're going to get married 4 months before ours, so next month. And she wants to get married because, quote unquote, she's never had a big wedding. She's never had a real wedding, which is odd because she was married to my dad for about 40 years. My dad passed away roughly 2 years ago, and 1 month later, she decided to fly to Australia to meet this guy she'd been chatting with on the Scrabble game, Scrabble online game, Words with Friends. Fine. That's all okay. But now that she's full on planning her wedding, she has decided that she would like to have me help plan it. I don't know if that's something cute she thinks is happening. We can be buddies together planning our weddings, but my fiance and I are not comfortable with her getting married. We don't really want to be involved in it. This isn't really a wedding about love, as far as we can tell. It's mostly about her getting more attention. My mom's a narcissist and has been for a long time. And over the years, she's been getting a lot worse. So I guess I'm just calling because I'm not really sure how to deal with her. My fiance and I are both a little hurt, angry, and disgusted. We don't want to help her with her wedding. We don't really want to hear about it because I'm getting slews of texts every day asking more questions about what she should do. And the small wedding is supposed to be in her house next month. It's getting more elaborate, getting bigger, and it's a little bit embarrassing. So how do you handle narcissism in a family member?
How do we protect ourselves? And how do we make sure we're not getting trumped by her wanting all the attention when this is our first wedding and we're really excited?
So basically, your complaint boils down to, my mother is an attention-seeking narcissist who's drawing attention away from me. It's perfectly understandable that you're annoyed. Your wedding's 5 months out. Your mother suddenly announces she's having a wedding. She tries to draw you in to the planning for that wedding. I can understand why that's annoying. You have a lot on your plate. You're busy planning your own wedding. You don't have the bandwidth to help your mother plan her sudden, perhaps ill-advised marriage to a near stranger. And you don't have to be involved. How do you handle a narcissist in the family? Well, you can't control them. You can't order your mother not to get married. You can't dictate to her, but you can have boundaries and make them clear. It's fine, you're getting married. I can't help you plan it. Sorry. And when someone announces a wedding 4 weeks out, it's not always possible for everyone that they invite to that wedding to show up on command in 4 short weeks. So if you determine that you can't go logistically, you're not obligated to go. You can send a fucking toaster. You can send a broken toaster if you're mad. Take a hammer to it. All that said, and I'm on your side, really I am. All that said, we aren't in control of when other people decide to marry. People don't have to wait till after our weddings to have their own weddings. If we're having a wedding that we're planning months and months in advance and somebody else feels a need to get married in Vegas that weekend, that is their legal moral right to have that quickie wedding. They can't draft people into helping them plan that wedding or showing up for that wedding. So you don't have to help your mother out. Don't have to help her plan. You can just tell her that you're busy with your own plans. But you can't allow yourself, or you shouldn't allow yourself, or it's a waste of time and emotional energy to allow yourself to be consumed by anger about what your mother's doing. You can't control your mother. If she's an attention-seeking, annoying narcissist, everybody knows it. Other family members know it. Everybody's rolling their eyes together in unison, and that should be comfort enough for you. Send that toaster. Focus on your own wedding. Focus on your own plans. Pay her no attention.
Hi, Dan. I'm wondering if it's ever appropriate or even socially acceptable to tell someone that they look nothing like their Tinder pic and that it's misleading, or is it just better to politely decline a second date for other reasons, like just not feeling it?
This is one of those circumstances where you aren't obligated to tell some stranger why it is that you're not going to see them again. People know that they should put accurate, recent, representative photos of themselves on dating sites. If he keeps, you know, having these interactions with people, getting to first date, and then there's no second date, or the first date is quickly aborted in the first 5 minutes, he's going to have to piece it together. He should be able to piece it together over time. Anyone who puts up inaccurate, non-recent, non-representative photos of themselves, that's likely what's going on here. And he can ask his friends to help him game out the problem. Like, why does he keep getting, you know, interest and a first date that lasts 5 minutes and no more? And then it's on his friends to tell him, well, look, your pictures don't look anything like you do. That's the problem. You don't have to tell him that. It might be helpful if you did, but then, you know, if you're going to be the truth teller and you're not the friend, or you're not the person working it out for themselves, they may blow up. They may get angry, and you don't have to risk that if you don't want to risk that. It would ultimately be to his benefit if you told him the truth. It's not your responsibility, however, to tell him this truth. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. Sweet Tea tweets, sometimes a Savage Lovecast call hits a little close to home, but in today's episode, 2 calls in a row touched on problems I've been having, and I'm very thankful to Fake Dan Savage for the validating advice he gives that I can apply to my life too. Oh, that's really sweet. Thank you, Sweet Tea, for that very sweet tweet. Amanda Oakery tweets, hey, Savage Lovecast, I found porn on my 8.5-year-old and 10-year-old's phones and iPads. Fuck, isn't that young? Thanks for the advice on what to say, Dan. I told them it's not how women want to be treated, that a lot of porn is made for angry, lonely men, and it's not how you should learn about sex. Well done, Mom. I'm happy I could help you out, but you did the heavy lifting. And finally, Hazenberg tweets, I was feeling pretty crushingly depressed this morning, but coffee, the Savage Lovecast, and the McElroy brothers' shenanigans over at My Brother and Me are helping a lot. Happy to help, and all of us here at the Savage Lovecast are big fans of My Brother and Me, the McElroy brothers' terrific and long-running podcast. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now some of your response calls.
In response to the Ambien Wanker in episode 690, I really like Dan's advice. I thought that was very thoughtful, considerate, and I really appreciated it. I think it's also okay not to tell if you're in the right situation to do that. I love masturbating next to my husband in bed while he sleeps. In fact, part of the enjoyment, I think, is the sort of fear of getting caught. And he is 100% not the person who would lay there and suffer silently so that I could have my wank. So I don't have any qualms about waking him up or inconveniencing him. So I think if you're in the right situation with the right partner, there's absolutely no ethical dilemma about doing that without telling your partner.
Hi, this is a comment about the caller who had a negative sexual experience while being blacked out. I think Dan had two blind spots with this call that I just want to draw attention to. This person may be struggling with alcoholism or addiction. In that case, they're not going to be capable of stopping or slowing down or moderating. Just saying that because part of what made me quit drinking was having some of these blackout experiences and realizing that I was not in control. Second thing, she really needs to tell her boyfriend, just for the sake of his sexual health, the person she had the encounter with, he couldn't remember if he came or where he came, and I really doubt condoms were a big part of this experience. So if they did engage in unsafe sex, it's really her obligation to let her boyfriend know so he can keep himself safe from contracting anything and that she can wait and get an STD or an STI test before they have unprotected sex again.
Hello, I'm calling in response to the trans woman in episode 690 that was having trouble with fearing that her butt wasn't clean for sex. And Dan, I can't believe you didn't advise this. Get a bidet. Get a bidet. Spray your butt. Spray it multiple times. Spray it as many times as you want. Doesn't take very long. Flush it out. Clean it up. Wipe it dry. Good to go. Less than a couple minutes. Taking an hour or two to prepare your butt for anal is just ridiculous. Get a bidet.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Even better than calling our hotline, use your phone. Use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Hump, my little porn film festival, is touring the country right now. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out when Hump is coming to a city near you. And if you like the Lovecast, if you particularly like me popping off at the beginning of the Lovecast, you will love Blabbermouth, where a whole bunch of stranger staffers pop off about the week's news, hosted by Eli Sanders, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. That's Blabbermouth, comes out on all your podcasting platforms every Wednesday. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.